Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Moving Right Along, a Muppet movie podcast brought to you by toughpigs.com. This is the podcast where we watch the Muppet Christmas Carol 2 minutes at a time and talk about it a lot. I'm your host, Ryan Rowe.
I'm your other host, Anthony Strand.
And today we have a first-time guest on this podcast, a fellow Muppet nerd and a Tough Pigs contributor. We're very happy to have her with us. Guest, who are you?
Hello, I am Beth Cook. I joined Tough Pigs in late 2021 and have been putting out mostly articles about Fraggle Rock and am really excited for future projects to come.
That's wild. I feel like I say this every time we talk, but it's still surprising that it was that recent that you started writing for Tough Pigs. Because
you're
just so much one of the gang. Like, like that's the thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. A kindred spirit of Muppet nerddom.
Absolutely. Well, and of course, what's that?
Take a wild guess what I'm drinking here in my big mug of tea.
Earl Grey tea.
No, come on. A specially themed tea that might be particularly relevant.
Is it one of the Muppet Christmas Carol teas from Adagio?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys reviewed.
So it's, let's see now, which one? So it's Thankful Heart, because that's coming up in the movie.
Bingo.
Is it really that rule? Nice.
Okay, so what does the Thankful Heart tea taste like?
Let's see here.
Or, you have the ingredients.
Yes. Honeybush Orange. Cranberry black, ginger black, orange peel, ginger pieces, and cloves.
Yeah, I was going to say, my memory of it is that it tastes like a roasted turkey.
Oh, all right. That's appropriate.
And not in a bad way, but it's like very like a like a ginger and orange glaze or something. Based ham, I guess, more really is what I mean.
Not like one of those, did you ever have the, and we may have even talked about this before, did you ever have those Jones sodas that they would sell around Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
It was like turkey flavored soda, like cranberry sauce
stuffing.
Soda.
Yeah, they had stuffing and gravy.
Yeah.
I think it was stuffing and gravy was one. They had like a Thanksgiving four pack.
Yeah. Most of them were not good, but it was the novelty. It was just
the novelty of it. Yeah.
Enough to. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm glad the tea doesn't taste like gravy.
No, they were all fantastic. And this was one of the only ones that I had any left. Because I went out and bought the whole set as soon as that review came out.
I'm so glad we could help you out with that.
Oh, yeah. They were all fantastic.
Yeah, because
the one
that
went the fastest was the chocolate mint one. That was my favorite.
Sure. Which I want to say was One More Sleep. I don't remember. I think it was.
No.
Let me see.
That one was Christmas Morning. One More Sleep was another decaffeinated one.
I guess it was
one,
decaf. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I could also
One More Sleep was decaf, because if it was caffeinated, you wouldn't be able to sleep.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, wait, I have that one here. One More Sleep. yep. Rooibos Vanilla Chai, Decaf Orange, Honeybush Orange. So yeah, all of those are decaf.
Awesome. Did you know that Adagio T's Twitter account responded to that article, by the way?
Great.
I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, it was really nice of them. They just replied to the tweet with a GIF of "Thank you for making me a part of this."
Oh, fun.
Yeah,
so which somebody was like, really so paying sweet. Attention to it.
Yeah,
that's perfectly appropriate.
Yeah,
yeah, and we will link to that review of those flavored teas in the show notes.
Yeah, that was something me and Roz did for the website 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah, like 2 years ago, Christmas 2020, I guess.
Wow.
So. And we helped them get at least one new customer, which was Beth. So
yeah, look at that. It worked. See, this is why, like everyone should be sending us free Muppet merchandise and free everything so we can
definitely
review it and get more eyes on it. Yeah. And anyway, today we are talking about minutes 77 and 78 of the Muppet Christmas Carol, in which Scrooge orders a turkey from a bunny and makes a charitable donation. And these minutes begin just as Scrooge is calling out, "You there, boy," to somebody who is standing down on the street. Who is that boy? Well, it's Bean Bunny, the kid who we saw yesterday attempting to sing a Christmas carol at Scrooge's office, and he got the door slammed in his face. And then we saw him shivering in a pile of newspapers, but I guess he's okay. He made it through the night, at least. That's nice.
Buddy.
Yeah.
Scrooge asks him what day today is. Bean seems a little bit confused by this question, so Scrooge repeats it, and Bean says, today...
Right, before that, one quick note. So Bean reacts to Rizzo rushing by, and he kind of does a double take and sees Rizzo and Gonzo. So do we yet have a cohesive theory for when Rizzo and Gonzo can interact with the world around them and when they can't?
Well, so this is the part where this was from the Oh My Disney video on this movie. Brian Henson said that in this scene, they did this on purpose, where the fact that Bean can see them and the fact that Gonzo and Rizzo leave footprints in the snow is a deliberate sign that the story has caught up with the present day and Gonzo and Rizzo. And they're now living in the same reality as the characters. However, we've made many observations about moments in the movie where that doesn't really align with that, where other characters have reacted to them and they've been able to interact with things. So,
you know, yeah, I'm trying to put together a similar hypothesis about when Uncle Traveling Matt can be seen and interacted with by the silly creatures out in outer space and when they completely ignore him. And I imagine I will have similar
hard time.
Head desk moments. No, they just ruined my theory.
Well, no, that's a funny thing because it's such a huge deal when Doc meets the Fraggles in the last episode of Fraggle Rock. But throughout the entire series, Uncle Traveling Matt has been interacting with silly creatures and his travels, and they've been seeing him and communicating with him and reacting to him. So,
right.
Again, whatever. Just try not to think about it too hard.
Right.
Yeah,
we should. So what you're saying is that we shouldn't write Brian Henson a letter that's like, excuse me, sir, the Swedish look, chef you... sings a song directly to Gonzo and Rizzo at Fezziwig's party. And I highly doubt that scene takes place now.
That's an example. Yeah. So, no, if you want to write Brian Henson that letter, I encourage you to do that. So like, and don't address it like Mr. Henson or Dear Brian. Just say, excuse me, sir, colon.
I saw your video on the defunct web page, Oh My Disney. And I have to imagine your sloppy errors are the reason it was discontinued.
The entire website of Oh My Disney shut down because there were just too many problems with that little bit of continuity.
Yes, that like very pleasant and informative video featuring two friends watching a masterpiece they made together. Yes.
Yeah.
How dare they?
Too bad.
So do we just want to talk about Bean Bunny in general? Like, I know we talked about him last time when he was on the show last time, but Beth, you're like a big Bean head. So you probably got some Bean Bunny thoughts.
Yeah. I'm the, apparently the new chief, Bean defender around town.
Bean enthusiast.
I like that. So I'm working on an article that basically, you know, does what Tough Pigs does best, you know, dives too deeply and goes into too much detail. And I'm going to try really, really hard not to make it one of those articles that's like, this thing that I loved when I was young got worse as it got older, and I'm grumpy about that. Sure. But, in general, I'm really curious to learn more from folks about their opinions on Bean Bunny and how that coincides with whether or not they grew up watching The Tale of the Bunny Picnic, which is where he originated from.
And in that, he's played very much as just like a straight character. Like he's just the protagonist. He's just this cute little bunny and that's it.
Yeah. Like literally everyone is a cute little bunny.
Right.
With the exception of the dog and the big scary farmer. You know, he's not the cute one. He's not even the youngest one. There's like a little baby one with Elmo's voice.
Yeah. Sounds. Yeah.
But yeah, he gets to have this whole wonderful arc and depth of character. And I get that that's really hard to do for a continuing character when they're no longer the protagonist of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But I started watching the Jim Henson Hour because you guys talked about how much you love it. I thought, well, there must be something to this thing. I should go back and watch it. And I've been loving it. It's great.
Oh, good.
And
what a relief.
you got one more person watching.
The Jim Henson Hour is my special baby.
Put a tally mark on the board.
So I go. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, so I was surprised and delighted to see that he shows up in most episodes, not all of them. But when he does, it's interesting because, you know, Kermit does deliberately say, you know, we hired Bean to be cute so the rest of us don't have to bother. And I think that that's the first time that that sentiment is expressed, but it's not the last time.
Right. Yeah, they definitely say it in Muppets of Walt Disney World. Scooter says it.
Yes. Too,
like that exact line.
Yeah. But the nice thing about the Jim Henson Hour is that Bean gets so much more else to do. Like, he has now this blossoming career and, you know, projects that he's working on and hobbies in his off time.
That's true.
And so even though I wouldn't say he gets, like, you know, an emotional character arc, he gets more depth. Like, he's a young adult now. He's out there living his life. I'm like, good for you, buddy. And then I think...
Yeah, well, and it's sort of like he's an actor playing this cute kid character.
Exactly. Yeah, the Muppets at Walt Disney World I just watched for the first time this past week. And I really liked that it early on, he's the only non-frog character genuinely trying to interact with Kermit's family.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, "Ribbit, ribbit, I'm trying to learn frog, even though I'm a bunny."
Yeah.
And everyone else is just like, "Oh, Disney World's around the corner? See ya."
Yeah.
But then for the rest of the special, he's just relegated to the cute one. And he doesn't get anything else substantive to do or to say pretty much for the rest of the time that
we see him in Muppet stuff. Yeah, he has like one or two bits with Scooter, and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And they give him like one terrible throwaway line that like wouldn't fit to anyone else. So maybe they were like, "Oh, let's just give it to Bean." Where, you know, Kermit and Miss Piggy get pulled onto the show and Scooter's like, "Doesn't that lady pig look familiar?" And they have Bean say, "Don't all lady pigs look the same?"
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, "Oh, that doesn't hold up great."
Yeah.
Great. But yeah, then I feel like the Muppets at Walt Disney World was kind of the beginning of the end for Bean, because from then on, he was just the cute one. Like, I rewatched Muppet Vision 3D and kind of the same thing. You know, it did have that same piece from Tale of the Bunny Picnic where he's trying to be helpful and not being super great at being helpful. But then he gets sad and runs away and we're supposed to feel bad for him. And then,
I guess it's his portrayal on that is a little more sincere than it was on the Jim Henson Hour. Like, cause they don't do the whole, like, we hired him to be cute thing in Muppet Vision. Right.
Right.
So yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, it was that very brief span of a couple of years where I think he was becoming one of Steve Whitmire's major characters. And then once Steve took over Kermit, like, there was probably not so much of a push to use Bean anymore.
Right. Well,
that makes a lot of sense.
Because this movie, I mean, this scene is really kind of the last time he ever really gets anything to
anything like, of substance.
I mean, he's, you know, he'll get like slammed into the wall and things occasionally.
Right, that's what he became.
That's what he does after this.
Little guy who would be involved in these slapstick gags occasionally.
Which you always need a Muppet to be able to throw across the screen.
Right.
I was writing this out in my notes that I was like, okay, I will be the first to admit that yeet Bean across the screen is really fun to say and probably also to do. And it's fun to watch. But for me, it hits worse. Like, I'd rather, you know, a comedic moment of like throwing him across the screen, but the moment of him, you know, shivering in the cold under the newspaper, like, that's genuinely heartbreaking.
It is. Yeah,
it's very heartbreaking. Yeah. Well, and as long as we're talking about the push to make Bean Bunny a major character around this time, he's also a regular on the last two seasons of Muppet Babies.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Like, he joined the gang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried to find clips to rewatch that, but they've got that stuff locked down. I couldn't even find pirated versions.
So weirdly, I'm sure I've told this on the podcast before. We own 3 VHS tapes of Muppet Babies episodes, which my kids, not so much right now, but there have been times where they want to watch it all the time. And the title of Muppet Babies, the original series, in my house, because Iris called it this from the time she was about 3, was Downstairs Muppet Babies. Because regular Muppet Babies that we can watch upstairs on the TV that gets streaming services, that's upstairs Muppet Babies. But we only have a VCR in the basement. So that's downstairs, Muffy B.
I get it. I had VCRs that were labeled Raffy Yellow Shirt, Raffy Red Shirt, and Raffy Blue Shirt.
Sure, there you go. But what I was going to say is one of the episodes that we have, one of the five episodes that we have on tape is the episode where Uncle Statler and Uncle Waldorf give them a toy train set, and Bean's in that one. It's towards the end. So we've seen like my kids think of Bean as one of the main guys on Muppet Babies, you know, because they've only seen these five episodes, you know?
Right, right.
And he's around. I think he might be in the Marco Polo one too, now that I'm thinking about it.
Anyway. Yeah, I was trying to figure out like a timeline of, you know, when all the various Bean things came out, and it looks like Muppet Babies might have been between Bunny Picnic and Muppets at Walt Disney World. And all I could find on Muppet Wiki, it says that, you know, he appeared in the last two seasons. He joined the other babies in the nursery and often appeared as innocent and rather naive in contrast to the others.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I guess that makes sense for the trajectory they're trying to put him on.
Right. Yeah. So it looks like his first appearance was December 9th, 1989 was when it aired. So that's after the cancellation of the Jim Henson Hour. Probably in production while the Jim Henson Hour was on.
It must have been, yeah.
Oh.
I would guess. But it's been, they didn't add Digit and Leon and...
Or Clifford.
Clifford, yeah.
Yeah.
Vicky, you know?
Honestly, I would kind of love Vicky to see baby versions of all of them. Baby.
Yeah, they'd be all cute. They'd be all adorable. good stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is Bean's kind of grand finale. And it's nice that he gets to go out on a moment of triumph, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, one of the last things we see him do is run away with a bag of money, so that's a triumph. I mean, we will see him after this, in this movie, but yeah, man, I have no idea where we left off. He tells Scrooge that it's Christmas Day, I think that's where we were.
Sure. Yep.
And so in these shots, looking down at Bean from Scrooge's point of view on the second floor, you can see you can see Bean's tracks in the snow, which is a nice little attention to detail. And you can see Gonzo and Rizzo's footprints, which is what Brian Henson was referring to, that like, so now Gonzo and Rizzo are affecting the physical world. That means they're caught up with reality, even though they have already been affecting the physical world before this.
I noted that as well. And I figure that's got to be a deliberate choice.
Yeah. But yeah. And I like, you know, this is puppeteers sticking their hands up through the floor to make these puppets appear to have full bodies. So it's nice that they bothered to add that little attention to detail. Scrooge is very happy that it's Christmas. He says, "It's Christmas Day. I haven't missed it. The spirits did it all in one night. They can do anything they like." Of course they can. Of course they can. And Bean is still very confused by all this, but he plays along. He says, of course they can.
Yeah, that's cute. So
that line of Scrooge's always confused me as a kid, because doesn't he get pretty clear instructions from the beginning? All right, you're going to get visited by three ghosts tonight. You know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. So... they're time traveling the whole time. So why would he be surprised that he's back on Christmas morning?
Can I open up the old curiosity shop?
Ooh, please.
All right.
Please do.
Let me see now. So in the movie, yes, you are correct. In the book, Jacob Marley specifically says, "Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls one." Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over, Jacob? Hinted Scrooge. "Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate." So Jacob Marley tells him this is going to happen three nights in a row.
Wow.
And so at the end, Scrooge, I'll say this. Most of this exchange between Scrooge and Bean is straight out of the book. Almost everything here is in the book. But Scrooge does say, "I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. They can do anything they like. Of course they can. Of course they can." Like he says all that verbatim. The boy does not repeat, "Of course they can." That's Bean. That's a Jerry Jewell touch. But yeah, so I think that's what he's surprised about, is that he was promised three nights and they got it all done in one.
So why did Marley, and it is funny that this is here, even though Marley and Marley never said it would take place over three nights in the first place. Yeah. Right. Like you say, why would he expect otherwise? But yeah, why did Dickens write it that way?
I don't know.
Did he change
know.
His mind? Was he originally going to have the story take place over three nights?
But this was published all at once. This wasn't a series, you know?
Yeah.
like as many of his novels were, as I'm sure we've discussed. But
right,
this one was published all at once, and he did revise it. Like there are things right. The annotated Christmas Carol repeatedly points out, like in the manuscript, this was this other thing. You know, So I don't know. I don't know why he did that. We can't ask him now.
No, and it's like, is it to show how magical the ghosts actually are, or is it to create the possibility on our minds that it might have all been a dream? Like Scrooge just had this one weird dream
that lasted for a long time, and
woke up from it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, too bad we can't ask Dickens himself.
Right.
But then Scrooge asks if Bean knows the poultry shop on the next street, and he says he does. Scrooge compliments Bean's intelligence, and Bean does kind of like an aw-shucks kind of thing. Scrooge says, "Do you know if the prize turkey has been sold in the window?" Which is a little bit of an unusual sentence construction, but we understand what he means.
Mm-hmm.
Bean says, "Oh, the one twice as big as me? It's still there." Again, Bean's very cute in the scene.
Now, how has the giant turkey not been sold in the days leading up to Christmas? Is there really no right. demand for it?
It's Christmas yeah. Day now. There should be a family somewhere that wants it.
One does wonder if, like, Scrooge is one of the only people who can afford it. You know, if it's that big of a turkey or something. Good you point. Know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he does call it a prize turkey in the book, for the record.
Mm.
Prize turkey. Prize, so has it actually won some kind of award for turkeys?
I guess so. Scrooge does call him both intelligent and remarkable in the book also, which I like. Yeah. So in the book, he points out, do you know whether they sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little prize turkey, the big one.
Oh. And then, that distinction.
Yeah, and then that's when the boy says, what, the one as big as me? Because in the book, of course, it's not twice as big as him because he's a human boy. It's the one as big as me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right. Okay, that makes sense. I mean, even then, like twice as big as Bean Bunny is still not humongous, but it does help us understand that it's a big turkey.
Right.
I don't suppose there's any earlier reference to this turkey in the book, right?
No. No.
Like he doesn't pass by. Like somewhere out there there's one of those like YouTube film bros. Who's like, oh, this is bad screenwriting. He's talking about this turkey that he saw in the window, but we never saw him pass by the window and look at the turkey. It's a payoff with no setup.
But as long as we're talking about size, I'll just go ahead and say now that Scrooge in the book does call the turkey twice the size of Tiny Tim. So.
Oh, okay, yeah. He's about to say that.
Yeah.
Because I was going to have that question that I calculated that 30 seconds pass in the movie between comparing it to twice the size of two different tiny Muppets.
Right.
Yes.
Right,
yeah. That is interesting that Scrooge just heard Bean say that. And now he's comparing it to another small child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and like, also a small Muppet.
Yeah. But yeah, so in the book it is one time as big as the boy and twice as big as Tiny Tim. So it's at least two different sized children.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
So then the boy is
twice the size
twice
of Tiny
as big
Tim.
As Tiny Tim.
Okay. Is Tiny Tim an infant?
No,
Tiny Tim is just the world's biggest turkey.
It's a very large turkey.
Well, and then I was going to say this a little later, but so how do we think the size of the turkey compares to other Muppets? Like how many? As long as we're comparing it to these two, how many turkeys? How many prize turkeys tall is Sweetums?
Oh boy!
10 turkeys, 12 turkeys.
You went straight to Sweetums. I thought it was going to be like Fozzie. Or Rolf.
Or Fozzie. How many turkeys big is Fozzie?
Fozzie
answer
is...
Answer that one first.
2.43 turkeys tall.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
I was going to say 2-something.
Yeah.
See, I'm just automatically wondering just if it was...
Trying to picture Bean and Robin next to Fozzie, I guess that could be about right.
Well, look. So Sweetums, look at how big Robin is compared to Sweetums when he sits on him.
That's true.
Oh.
It's only twice as big as Robin. That's a lot of turkeys to get one Sweetums.
It's going
to
be a lot of turkeys.
Still going to be like eight turkeys or I don't know, something. I don't know.
Right.
Robin's
and then
very
how
small.
How about the turkey compared to one of the ink spots? Is the turkey twice as big as an ink spot? Three times as big as an
ink spot? Are probably
as big as an ink spot?
Ink spots are around the same size as Bean and Robin. Okay. Though I would say Robin might be a little bit smaller than Bean.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, I think that's right, yeah.
if we're including the ears, definitely.
Yeah, so he's definitely three times the size of Tiny Tim if it's twice as big as Bean. So I think the math is faulty from the start.
Okay, okay. Well, I'm glad we discussed it anyway.
Someone's got to do this in-depth journalism.
That's what we do. That's the point of this podcast. So Scrooge tells Bean to go buy the turkey, and he'll give him a shilling. No, 5 shillings. And he tosses down his bag of money. Bean takes it and runs away. I always think when I watch any version of A Christmas Carol that it would be hilarious if the boy just took Scrooge's money and just ran away just and ran never away. Came back.
Right. And that's
when I meant to do the math to, you know, one of those currency calculators to figure out how much that would be in modern American dollars. And I totally forgot.
Yeah. Mm. A shilling. They don't use shillings anymore, do they?
They don't use shillings anymore, no.
So, I don't know, but I'm sure you could figure it out.
Yeah. So, because they were decimalized in the 1970s, you know?
Right,
you know? Oh, right.
As we've discussed on this podcast earlier, when they were selling apples.
Oh, right. That's right.
But, also, in the book, Scrooge gives him a shilling and then says, come back in 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown. Which is 2.5 shillings. 2 shillings and 6 pence. So, okay. 5 shillings is twice as generous as he is in the book. Like, they ramp up his generosity a great deal.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, good for Scrooge and good for Bean.
Also, I was going to say, you mentioned the kid running off with Scrooge's money.
Yes.
I'm not 100% sure because it's been a while since I've seen it, but I think they do that joke in Blackadder's Christmas Carol, which starts with Blackadder being like the kindest and most naive man in town and everyone taking advantage of him. And then the ghosts visit him and he learns that he has to be selfish like his ancestors in order to get it.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
Yeah. It's great. It's wonderful.
I'm pretty sure our friend Johannes and I also did that in our video called The Old Man's Christmas, which is on YouTube. So I don't think either of us had seen the Blackadder special.
But you're right.
The same joke.
You should watch it. It's real good.
Yeah. I was going to say that's surprising that neither of you had seen that.
Around to it. Yeah. Maybe next Christmas.
Yeah, you should watch. There's only 24 episodes plus the special. So.
Oh, that's the entire series.
That's the entire series. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
it's one of those British.
It's one of those British comedies, and every season is set in a new time period. So it's really kind of like 4 different single season shows. Like you could just watch like the third one, and it's its own thing, you know, or whatever.
Mm, okay.
If you're gonna watch just one season, though, don't make it the first one.
No, definitely not the first one. Make it the second one if you're gonna watch one.
Okay, I'll put it on the list. Yeah.
Three is actually my favorite because of Hugh Laurie as Prince George, who's like a very like idiotic foppish dandy, and it's just Hugh Laurie having so much fun.
Okay,
so I don't know. Check that out.
Cool. Yeah, it's too much TV.
Yeah, TV is good sometimes.
Always.
TV is good sometimes. So then Gonzo starts to say to us, and so the boy was off like a shot, and then Bean knocks Gonzo and Rizzo over. It's funny because Rizzo and Bean are both performed by Steve Whitmire, and their voices are not so dissimilar to each other, but we do not hear them talk to each other here, which would have been funny.
Aha.
I wonder if their voices are too similar. Like, although I guess we heard Robin and Gobo talk in Muppet Family Christmas.
That's true.
Yeah, they have consecutive lines. Gobo says, and that's the way Fraggle presents work. And then Robin says, I love it. Right. And it sounds like the same person saying 2 things in a row. It's great. I love it.
Yeah. You love it too, just like Robin does.
I love it just like Robin.
So, like we said, back in Scrooge's house, he's delightedly scheming to surprise Bob Cratchit with this turkey. Then Gonzo tells us moments later.
Can I interject?
Yes.
Another thing from the book. So in the book, Scrooge says, here's the whole paragraph. And I'm reading this paragraph because it contains a reference to one of our favorite comedians, yours and mine. I'll send it to Bob Cratchit, whispered Scrooge, rubbing his hands and splitting with a laugh. He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. Joe Myler never made such a joke as sending it to Bob's will be.
Wait, so this was that, like, super old joke book
that
you told me about?
Yes.
I don't know if that, was that even on the podcast or was that just a conversation we had?
I think that's just something we've talked about. So Joe Myler's jests is... Joe Myler was a famous actor in the early 1700s, and for whatever reason, many years after his death, a man named John Motley, and they actually talk about this in the Annotated Christmas Carol. He has a whole paragraph about it. A man named John Motley wrote a book called Joe Myler's Jests, or The Wit's Handbook. And this book came out in 1739, and it's a collection of jokes that are, like, very elaborately worded. Like,
right, right. They sound like they're in the language of the time. They're jokes, but they're just so, they just sound so stilted to us now.
Right. And in the Annotated Christmas Carol, Michael Patrick Hearn talks about how eventually the Joe Myler name came to mean, like, a tired old joke. Like, you know, like, I don't think quite by Dickens' time, but, like, by the 20th century, it was like, okay. Joe Myler. And the reason Ryan and I were talking about this, I think, was because there's a Daffy Duck cartoon where he's trying to sell gags on the street. And one of the things he holds up is a Joe Myler joke book. And right. My son Miles loves that. He says it all the time. It's
he has no idea who Joe Myler is.
No. But why would he? Why would I? Like, you know, it's just...
Well, yeah, right. Why would any of us have known any of those references from cartoons from the 1940s that we grew up watching?
Right. But it's like... I feel bad that I can't remember the name of the cartoon. It's not one of the famous ones. But it's like... I want to say it's called Daffy Dilly. Like, let me see. It's just a name. Yes. So, tired of selling gag novelties on the street, Daffy tries for the $1 million award offered by J.P. Cubish for the first person to make him laugh. That's the That's the cartoon, Daffy Dilly, directed by Chuck Jones, and it's an underrated fave. Like, check it out if you haven't seen it. It's probably not on HBO Max anymore, because whatever, but anyway.
So, Scrooge, this is Scrooge, an older guy, saying, like, oh, this is as funny as a joke by that middle-of-the-road comedian. So this would be like, if this were written now, Scrooge would be like, oh, this will be like a Jay Leno joke.
Exactly.
Yep. So is the joke that he's going to send the turkey ahead of time and then not show up for dinner? Because in this version, he shows up with the turkey.
Right, but in the book, he doesn't go over to Bob Cratchit's house at all.
Oh. Yeah, it's just so weird.
As I think we've discussed, and we will again, he goes to spend Christmas with his nephew Fred, where he was invited.
Yeah, I mean, that
does
sense.
Make more sense.
Yeah, it actually does make more sense. And then he talks to the whole, like, being scowling at Bob, that happens at work the next morning. You know, the, like, fake scowling and then telling him that.
So he does, yeah, there is at least some payoff to that.
Yeah, yeah, there's, I mean, it's still, like, it's after Christmas Day, so it's kind of like,
yeah, that is the climax. Strange that you have to wait for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like,
but he's at you Fred's, mean we don't get, like, to see the real Mrs. Cratchit say, and I'm going to raise you right off the pavement?
Nope.
Maybe not in those words, unfortunately.
That was one of Jerry Jewell's editions.
Anthony, do you have any Joe Myler jokes in front of you?
I do, actually. Do you want me to read one?
Of course I do.
Okay. So this is one of the two that's listed on the Wikipedia page, but it's such a... Okay. This is joke 99 from Joe Myler's Jests. A lady's age happened to be questioned. She affirmed she was but 40 and called upon a gentleman that was in company for his opinion. "Cousin," said she, "do you believe I am in the right when I say I am but 40? I ought not to dispute it, madam," replied he, "for I have heard you say so these 10 years.
See, it's...
Okay, yeah.
It's
yeah.
actually better. It's better than that same joke would be if you told it in modern language. Just because it's so, like, it takes so long to get to the point, and it uses way too many words. Right. Somehow that makes it funny.
Well, so, Ryan, I'm going to go ahead and say it. When we were first talking about this, you rewrote the Mitch Hedberg escalator joke in Joe Myler's fashion, and I rewrote the John Mulaney not donating to your college routine in Joe Myler fashion.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, like you can't just tell me that and then not tell me the jokes.
All right, let me find them. Let me find them in our Gmail chat history. Okay.
We can cut out some of this.
Yeah. So let's see. Okay, here we go. Joe Myler's Jess. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Do you want me to just read them both since I found them, Ryan, or do you want to read your one?
You can read them both.
Okay, so here we go. Do we all know the John Mulaney routine about how you shouldn't donate to your college? Okay, so you can look that up. Pause the podcast if you haven't heard it. Look it up. The John Mulaney routine. It's one of his Netflix specials, and it. Let's see. The clip is actually on YouTube and it is entitled "Where's My Money." All right, so. A man received a missive from his alma mater. This man didst conclude his course of study some 2 decades prior, and yet the institution in question was seeking alms for its enrichment. I, declared the man, I did believe that our transaction was concluded. Art thou a university or a harlot? So there's that. And then I think we all know the Mitch Hedberg joke about how when an escalator stops, it just becomes stairs.
Yep. Yes.
A wise man understands that a mechanical moving staircase may never be considered inoperable. Rather, it will instead become an ordinary staircase. A set of mechanical moving staircase that has ceased to fulfill its intended purpose shall not bear a banner reading, "The mechanical moving staircase may not be used," but rather a banner reading, "The mechanical moving staircase is, until further notice, an ordinary staircase, and the manager of this establishment expresses great regret for the convenience resulting thereof."
Yeah.
So that's something me and Ryan did just for fun. Some random day.
Just for fun. And there's something so funny about that to me. And I encourage everyone to rewrite your own favorite jokes in the style of the Joe Myler. Absolutely. Joe Myler's jests. Wow. Okay.
All right. So what else happens in this movie?
I don't know. It's all downhill from here. Gonzo tells us, wait, did I say that already?
Oh, this is where he starts saying Merry Christmas to everybody.
Yes, exactly. Gonzo says, moments later, dressed in his finest, Scrooge appeared on the streets of the city to wish Merry Christmas to all the world. And I'm going to bet $1 that that is not from Dickens.
False. Incorrect.
It is from Dickens?
Yeah, here. Let me find it. Oh, man. I scrolled down to see the thing about Bob Cratchit. Here we go. So he gets the turkey and all this. He dressed himself all in his best, and at last got out into the streets. The people were by this time pouring forth as he had seen them with the Ghost of Christmas Present, and walking with his hands behind him, Scrooge regarded every one with a delighted smile. He looked so irresistibly pleasant, in a word, that 3 or 4 good-humored fellows said, "Good morning, sir, a Merry Christmas to you." And Scrooge said often afterwards that of all the blithe sounds he had ever heard, those were the blithest in his ears. So he's not saying Merry Christmas to everyone, I guess, but he's out and about and he's happy to be on the street.
Okay, so it's at least Jerry Jewell paraphrasing. It's not verbatim. Okay. I don't think I lose that dollar bet.
No.
So he does come out and he's wishing everybody Merry Christmas. So far, none of these people seem surprised that famous, mean, jerk, miser Ebenezer Scrooge is wishing them a Merry Christmas. I guess these people don't know him that well, maybe. Also, this includes these 2 kids who are just running by laughing hysterically. I want to know what they're laughing at. They're just like... They don't seem to be reacting to anything in particular. They're just like...
Yeah, they certainly don't care about Scrooge saying Merry Christmas to them.
Right, yeah. They just don't even...
They're just so hyped up that it's Christmas. You know? They're not in school.
Yeah.
They don't have to do the household chores right now because they're outside.
Yeah. They're as merry as a schoolboy.
Yeah. There you go.
Scrooge also pats Gonzo and Rizzo on the head, which is cute.
Yeah, I love that. Top hats. It's really cute.
I guess that's kind of come full circle now with... Gonzo and Rizzo kind of being reintegrated so much that even Scrooge can see them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Even Scrooge is actually acknowledging them and interacting with them. Gonzo says, everyone was out and about this fine morning, and soon he encountered 2 familiar faces. And then we cut away from these 2 characters played by Dave Gulls and Steve Whitmire to 2 characters played by Dave Gulls and Steve Whitmire.
Yeah.
So this is Bunsen and Beaker. Beaker is so startled to see Scrooge approaching that he pulls his head down into his body like a turtle. Bunsen and Beaker are standing out in front of the Grapes Tavern, according to the sign. I guess that's as good a name as any for a tavern, especially if they serve wine. Or raisins. And so there's this little exchange that happens here. And throughout the whole thing, we can see some two-story buildings in the background. And as before, there are some Muppets sticking their heads or their entire bodies out the windows. One window has a small frog, and one window has these two chickens.
Yeah, I tried to figure out which frog it was, to no avail.
Oh, I would be very impressed if you could figure out exactly which frog. of the entire ensemble of Muppet frogs.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it wasn't Mrs. Appleby, I can tell you that.
No, I don't think so. Bunsen and Beaker are both alarmed to see Scrooge, but then he brings up this charity donation that they were asking him about yesterday. He says, "Put me down for," and then he whispers some unbelievably large number in Bunsen's ear. Bunsen says, well, "That much?"
So right before that, when Scrooge says, "But about the charity donation you asked me for yesterday," and then, you know, Beaker stops shaking and he pops his head back up and he releases his hold on Bunsen's arm. He was like hiding behind Bunsen. But Bunsen, in response, makes this sound. I haven't been able to figure out what he says. It's my best guess is that he's saying, "Oh, yeah," but it's kind of slurred together like "earlier."
Huh. I don't think I noticed that.
And I'm like, is that an actual line or is he just making a sound?
Like, he's just so surprised that Scrooge is not just there to yell at them.
Right, exactly.
Huh. Yeah, I don't think I caught that, but I'll have to go back and find it.
Yeah, I didn't notice either. Sorry.
Yeah, maybe I'll drop that audio in here.
Yeah, please.
Mr. Scrooge?
Pardon me, gentlemen, but about the charity donation you asked me for yesterday.
Yeah, Scrooge says not a penny less than whatever the number was that he just said. There are versions of this where we hear what the number is.
Right, although I will say this is right, that moment is right out of the book.
Mm.
That we don't know.
Yeah, he says, Scrooge says, the charity man says, "Mr. Scrooge." "Yes," said Scrooge, "that is my name, and I fear it may not be pleasant to you. Allow me to ask your pardon, and you will have the goodness." "Here," Scrooge whispered in his ear. "Lord bless me," cried the gentleman, as if his breath were taken away. "My dear Mr. Scrooge, are you serious?" "If you please," said Scrooge, "not a farthing less. A great many back payments are included in it, I assure you." So that line is
right, which is what he says then. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, does the book have the charity man's best buddy right there listening at his other ear as if to hear through his buddy's head?
Unfortunately not.
Yeah, that's a nice, like, that's a very cartoony gag. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then Bunsen says he wishes there was something they could give to Scrooge. Obviously, this is in the days before you would donate to a charity and you would get, like, address labels or a bumper sticker or a tote bag. Although it would be nice. I would love to see Bunsen give Scrooge a tote bag from the Order of Victoria Charity Foundation. And then Scrooge could use it to carry all the presents around for the rest of the scene.
True. You know what the real tragedy is, though?
What?
Beaker gave Scrooge his scarf, and he didn't know that Bunsen was going to give him a new scarf rack.
Oh.
For Christmas.
Wow.
I don't know.
I'll bet at some point Scrooge will figure that out and sort it all out like Mr. Hooper does.
He's going to come back and he just be like, "I got to see that everyone got exactly what they wanted for Christmas."
Yeah. Did Bunsen and Beaker do one of those little Gift of the Magi
they
gags
do.
At the
it's
beginning
like,
of It's a Very Merry Muppet Christmas Movie?
They do. It's like something about a Petri dish and a microscope or something, I want to say.
Yeah, one of them has like a collection of spores or something.
Yeah, and it was got him like a new Petri dish, and then the other one, it was a microscope. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
You wrote a quiz about this, so you saw this more recently than I did.
I did?
You wrote a Sporkle quiz about all the Muppet gifts, and it was
right.
in there.
Yes, I did. You're right. Yeah. No, I forgot about that.
Like, just this past Christmas, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But I still forgot that detail somehow.
It's fine. That movie's not memorable. We're good.
Have to go back and take my own quiz again.
You got
to
do it.
Yeah. Yes, and as we were alluding to, Beaker has an idea for something they can give him. He starts to pull off this cozy red scarf he's wearing. He walks over to Scrooge. But that is where this clip ends, actually. So we have to just guess what he's going to do with that scarf. I hope he's not going to strangle Scrooge with it because he's so offended by what Scrooge did yesterday.
I watched that little clip back a few times, and mm-hmm. it looks so smooth that we do exactly what we're supposed to do. We forget that Beaker is being operated by two different people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those hands are removing that scarf so smoothly that I'm wondering how many takes that required.
Oh, I'm sure. How many... Is it just a shot of Beaker removing the scarf, or is there a longer... Is there more business that comes before or after?
Oh, good point.
In the same shot. Is that what you're asking?
I'm just wondering, like, did they just do that one action over and over again to get the take? Or did they, is there more that they had to cram in?
Did they, like, pause, be like, okay, now one person is the head and the other person is both arms. So
there, boy.
Yeah, I don't know.
So let's see.
Maybe.
Right now I'm watching, it's the same shot where Bunsen says, I wish there was something we could do for you. Beaker takes off the scarf and walks over to him. That's all in one shot.
Okay.
And maybe, so, I don't know, it probably cuts to Michael Caine right after that, I would guess, but we don't.
I think so,
It's not in the Google Drive video that I have in front of me.
Right. I hope they didn't have to spend all day doing that. And Beaker, fortunately, he has the ability to remove his own scarf because he has live hands. He's not just a rod puppet.
Right.
There are other Muppets who just couldn't do it, probably, but... that's all I have for these 2 minutes. I will just add this character of the boy who Scrooge calls to buy the turkey does appear in two of the other adaptations. I think this is the final character who appears in other adaptations featuring established characters. He is in the Muppet Magazine comic strip, A Sort of Christmas Carol. Do you want to guess which Muppet plays him there?
Let's see. Simon the Frog.
No. Simon and the Frog, I don't think, had been invented yet.
Okay, so it's not Robin, because Robin's Tiny
Robin.
Tim again in that.
Robin was Tiny Tim in that comic strip.
So it's Gaffer
and
the
Baxter. Not Bean.
Not Bean.
Not Bean. This is from the late 80s, I guess.
Mm.
I mean, I guess, yeah, Bean might have been created, but he wasn't really. Yeah, he wouldn't have been around.
Is it Scooter?
It's Scooter.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's a teen.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
He's a boy. Yeah. and then this, okay, possibly for the final time now, in the Rich Little Christmas Carol special, who do you think played the boy?
And so Truman Capote was Tiny Tim, correct?
Yes, correct.
So the boy is going to be...
I think this is probably an impression that you or a guest has guessed before, but...
And it's,
but it has not actually come up yet.
Carol Channing.
Not Carol Channing. I don't know if Rich Little does a Carol Channing impression.
It sure seems like he would, though, you know?
That would be hilarious.
Is it Paul Lynde? We haven't seen Paul Lynde yet, right? Or have we? I don't remember.
I think we have seen Paul
Lynde. Okay, so it's not Paul Lynde. So let me guess one more time. Is it... Bud Cort in Harold and Maude?
No. How do you do your Bud Cort impression? How would that go?
That's it. Just like a sharp intake of breath. That's my Bud Cort impression in Harold and Maude.
Okay.
I'm going to say my final guess, Lassie.
That would have been great too, because then he could have been like, boy, boy, fetch the turkey. Go fetch the turkey. Yeah, no, that would have been great. But this is an impression of a celebrity who was not a boy, not known for being a boy, but sort of famous for claiming to be younger than he was.
Jack Benny? This is Jack Benny?
Jack Benny is the boy, yes.
Wow.
That's weird.
And my curiosity got the better of me. I did look up the Rich Little special on YouTube just to see how this scene played out.
This was the first time you've done it in this whole season.
Yeah, first time, yeah. There's Jack Benny playing the violin on the street when Scrooge calls down to him, and they exchange some lines that are not very funny, and then he goes off to get the turkey.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yep. So that's it. I think that's the last character. So
long. So long. Well, I can't wait until we watch talk about all the casting at Rich Little's Treasure Island next season. It's going to be so funny.
Yeah, you're going to love his...
Burt Ward as Jim Hawkins, yeah.
There you go, yeah. I was going to say Ronald Reagan as Billy Bones. I don't know. Well, I got the black spot. Yeah, that's all I have. Anything else on these 2 minutes? Beth, starting with you.
Nothing else on these 2 minutes. Am I allowed to throw in one comment about the next 2 minutes?
Please. Sure, you will not be here next week, so please.
So in the song Thankful Heart, I have my own kind of musical add-in moment that I have been doing for years now, similar to when Joe was on and he was saying that he and his wife do that little interlude about the horses dancing.
The little ditty about the horses, right?
Yeah, for years.
The instrumental section.
There's this, so the line, stop and look around you, the glory that you see. You know, Scrooge is coming out of a building and he's suddenly among a crowd and talking to the people, but he puts his hand on the shoulder of one woman, and for this line, it looks like he's talking just to her. And so I always sing, stop and look around you. Why her specifically?
Nice, nice. That rules.
And I've never gotten an answer.
Oh, man. Well,
should write Brian Henson a strongly worded letter.
Yeah. We got so many answer. Things.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to watch out for that when we get to that clip. I guess possibly next week.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll look for that lady. Anthony, anything about these 2 minutes?
The only thing that I didn't get to in my notes is when the two boys run past Scrooge, excited and laughing, Scrooge kind of sidesteps them like Rob Petrie sidestepping the Ottoman in the opening credits to the Dick Van Dyke Show. That's all.
Yeah, no, that's good. I didn't happen to pick up on that. I was just wondering what they were laughing at.
Sure.
Okay, then, Beth, as you may know, we like to ask all of our guests 3 questions, starting with, do you remember the first time you saw this movie, and what's your history with it?
So, I don't remember the first time I saw it. I asked my mom, did we go see this in the theater? And she said, I don't think we did. So, probably I grew up seeing it on VHS, like many people did. Mm-hmm. And it came out when I was 7, so I remember being old enough to kind of understand that this movie was important and special because it was the first, you know, major thing since Jim Henson died. And so everyone was kind of wondering, you know, are the Muppets going to continue at all? What is it going to be like? What is Kermit going to sound like? And I was young enough that when I read, you know, dedicated to our friends Jim Henson and Richard Hunt, that I had no idea who Richard Hunt was.
Sure.
But I was old enough that I thought, well, he must be pretty important if he got mentioned alongside Jim Henson. Because, you know, when you're 7, you have no idea who any of the other guys are. Like, you know the name Jim Henson and then pretty much nobody else. And now, of course, now I'm like, oh, Richard, too, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then the second question is, where does this one go in your ranking of all the Muppet movies?
So you're going to hate this answer, but I don't rank things.
Okay. we had another guest recently, David Luffy, who said he does not like to rank things. So you're not alone.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say it's one of my favorites.
That's good enough.
Yeah, I can't pick a favorite.
There it is. Slap it on the VHS cover. One of my favorites, Beth Cook.
That's it. And then, do you watch this every year on the holidays?
Almost every year. This was the first Christmas in a while that I didn't. Partly because I knew that I was eventually going to be on this podcast, and I figured, well, I'll just watch it, you know, whenever that happens. And my regular Friday night virtual movie group that has been meeting virtually every Friday since the start of quarantine. They were watching it the night that I was supposed to fly out to California to see my family. And so I was like, oh, sorry to miss this one, but y'all should go listen to moving right along because it's great and they give all this background info. And normally I'm the dramaturge of the group. It's like, oh, this actor sure. that we see in the scene is also has been in all these other things. That's where you recognize him from.
Sure, yeah,
but as the Muppet nerd in the group, then, you know, I was like, man, I'm falling behind on my dramaturge duties here. but of course, my flight got canceled. The first of many of my flights to get canceled that holiday Oof. Trip.
Sure.
So it was really nice to come back from the airport all miserable and cold and have this wonderfully comforting movie to come to with my group of friends and be able to resume my duties and be like, oh, here's this background info that I just learned.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But yeah, normally I watch all of my favorite, you know, various Henson Christmassy movies and specials while I'm making Grandma Cook's Christmas cookies.
Yeah, it just seems like it's part of the yearly traditions for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was something that I started doing for myself when I was, you know, living alone, and you got to start kind of making your own traditions that are, you know, built off of the ones that you grew up on. So, you know, I'd be making the same old Christmas cookies that, you know, we had for as long as I can remember. But I was like, well, you know, I need something on in the background that I know well enough that I can only pay attention to it with half my brain.
Right.
Right.
And so, yeah, I would say the ones that I watch every year without fail are this one, Emmett Otter, The Christmas Toy. I know I'm in the minority on that one.
No, it's great.
A Muppet Family Christmas. And then lately I've tried to add in a new one every year that I haven't seen yet.
Specifically Muppet special?
Oh, yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. So like, it's been a while now, but they're like, I didn't grow up watching, Christmas Eve on Sesame Street
okay.
over and
yeah,
over again.
I think
again.
That's the other yeah. sort of quintessential
yeah,
classic.
Yeah, I just had this very vague memory of seeing Big Bird shivering out in the cold with icicles dripping off of his beak, and that terrifying me as a child.
Sure,
so
sure.
So I was scared to watch it again. But yeah, it turns out it's fantastic. And then this past year, it was a special Sesame Street Christmas.
Oh boy.
What a treat that was.
That's
the
one word for it.
Sesame Street special.
Well, so I watched it and I was, you know, recording all of these thoughts. And then I went back and saw the review that Joe and Ryan did back in 2012. Turns out we had very similar thoughts.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great review, by the way. I love that one.
It really is.
Oh, thanks. Well, we will link to that in the show notes as well. But yeah, this is I probably most listeners know at this point, but this was this bizarre Sesame Street Christmas special that was not produced by Children's Television Workshop. It was some like variety show producer who basically rented the sets and some of the actors and only two of the puppeteers and just threw in a bunch of random celebrity cameos. And it's very strange. And the climax features Ethel Merman singing Tomorrow from Annie, but not doing any sort of choreography. She just stands there on the street and the humans just watch her awkwardly standing there. And yeah, it's fun to watch.
I would say the climax is actually after the end where you get this bizarre music video of...
Oh, on the DVD that came out. Yeah, yeah, that is so weird.
Michael Jackson and...
This like auto-tuned...
Oscar?
Oscar, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Jackson is in that special. He has maybe three lines. He just walks through and gives Oscar a book and then walks out. And
a book about ghosts.
Right. He's reading a book about ghosts and he gives the book to Oscar. And so for a DVD special feature, whatever like cheapo DVD label released this thing, made this weird. I'm sure I keep using the word weird, but
it's like word.
It's like a dance mix incorporating Michael Jackson's lines of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, something about imagination. And yeah. Well, now I'm going to have to go listen to that right after this. But anyway, if there is nothing else, then we will wrap things up for this week. Everyone, please make sure you check out toughpigs.com. Everywhere, you know where to find us. Our thanks to Morgan Davey for our logo. I am on Letterboxd at Movies Are Neat. Anthony is on Letterboxd at Zeppo Marxist. You can follow us there. I'm also on Twitter at Me Ryan Rowe. Beth, where can our listeners find you and or your work or anything on the internet?
You can find my articles on Tough Pigs and the Back to the Rock podcast, Fraggle Talk. And on social media, I am at Beth Anna Cook. That's Anna with two N's.
All right. Look for all of those things and follow all of those things. And listeners, we also love positive reviews online. I recently noticed there was a new-ish review on Apple Podcasts giving us 5 stars and said something about talking to the podcast, like someone enjoyed listening to the podcast and talking back to it. So that we're providing that service.
I'm glad we could do that.
We love to read those reviews. Yeah. And also, listeners, please tell everyone you know to listen to the show. Open your window, shout down to boys you see passing by on the street, and tell them to listen to the podcast. And join us again next week for another episode of Moving Right Along. Goodbye.
Miles actually calls it a Joe Myler jokes book.
Settle down for a long winter's nap. Bah, humbug.